Good morning, I'm Mark Franklin, and this is Career Buzz, conversations that enrich your career and life. Hi, it's Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of career professionals at CareerCycles.com, and I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz. Thanks for tuning in this morning. Engineers Without Borders invests in people and ideas to end global poverty. Its mission? To create change by supporting social innovations in Canada and Africa. It wants to break the systems that sustain poverty. In January, EWB held its annual conference in Hamilton, Ontario. I was pleased to be your Career Buzz correspondent. I interviewed keynote speaker Fred Kuatoko. He's a member of the Dream Team, a diverse consumer and survivor group, whose mission is that everyone with a mental health issue has access to safe, secure, and affordable supportive housing. I also interviewed social media expert Delise Sylvester, one of Ashoka's change makers. Stay tuned to the second half of today's show for these two inspiring interviews. But first, one of Canada's top 20 under 20, Wally Shaw, is a South Asian speaker and poet. As an artist, he's an advocate for bullying prevention and mental wellness. Wally helped raise over $1 million for United Way and is also ambassador for Crime Stoppers and Bell Let's Talk. Wally's been featured on MTV, Education Canada, the Toronto Star, and Huffington Post. He's appeared with people like Sarah McLachlan and hip-hop artist Kendrick Lamar. I'm glad to welcome Wally Shaw to Career Buzz. Wally, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So what do you like about the way things are going for you in your life these days?
Well, I think life is really great these days. Apart from having endless essays and exams due, everything is very, very, very good. And I'm very thankful that life is the way it is. And although sometimes university can be stressful, even university life is a very, very great blessing, because I have access to education and I have an opportunity to make something of myself and hopefully make something of my career and to learn and to be social. But even apart from that, I'm doing a lot of really great stuff outside of school. I'm working with kids. I'm working with people all over the country with my work in bullying and mental health, and things are great.
So what are all those things? Like, you're a student right now at the University of Toronto, but as a speaker and poet, what's a typical scenario over the last couple of weeks?
Well, a typical day sometimes when I wake up is usually I might have a class or two in the morning, so I'll get up in the morning, I'll go to my morning class, I'll make some notes and be a studious boy, and later on I will go to a keynote presentation, or I will go to a workshop where I'll teach some kids in high school how to write poetry. And what I do specifically, and what I've done over the past couple of years, is write spoken word poems. And that's sort of been my art form. It's been my release, my way of expressing myself. And I'll go to schools and I'll actually teach this to other kids who may be dealing with bullying, who may be dealing with issues like mental illness, and give them a positive coping strategy to deal with some of the issues that they might be going through in their lives. And sometimes that'll also include sharing some poetry in keynote presentations where I not only just address youth but also adults. So there's a wide variety of some of the things that I do with my performance, with my presentation. And then I'll spend some time hanging out. And that's the average day of Wally.
It's not your typical university student's day. What would you say are the main skills or strengths that you use, especially in your performance, in your role as speaker and poet? What skills and strengths do you draw on to be successful?
Well, I think one of the things that make most speakers and most presenters memorable is their ability to tell stories. And for anyone that you've heard do stand-up comedy or some sort of, you know, live performance, it's always been the stories that are most memorable. And one of the things that I feel like I am able to do well is tell stories. And I feel that is something that makes me unique in terms of being a poet. And I think it's also something that makes me different than everyone else that sort of does speaking, aside from the fact that I'm also a young speaker, I'm also a South Asian speaker, which is also kind of rare. So I think those are some of the skills that I have. But also, I guess maybe just being someone that does speaking as well as poetry is a different thing in itself. Not a lot of people do that. Um, But I found myself as a, I've always found myself as a very social person. I've always liked to just be around people, talk to people, you know, communicate ideas, and I feel like that sort of transferred over well in terms of what I'm doing right now in terms of my young early steps in my career.
Right on. My guest this morning is Wally Shaw. He's a speaker and poet. You're listening to Career Buzz here on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto, worldwide at CIUT.fm. So, Wally, you're a university student now, but in your teenage years, things looked quite different. So can you take us back? What happened, and what happened that took you down a particular path that was problematic in your life?
Definitely. So for the young people that may be listening in the room, sometimes there are moments when you're growing up where you want to fit in, where you want to be the cool kid at school, or you feel like you don't belong anywhere, and you just want to belong really badly. And for me, when I was younger, when I was about 15 years old, I remember feeling that very, very strongly. And I also remember being a little bit constrained and being a little bit tied down when I was acting, because I grew up in a very cultural family. And so amongst backlash, amongst trying to be a little rebellious and be the cool kid, I got myself into a lot of trouble. And one of those things that I ended up getting myself into was a really big fight, which led to assault charges at the age of 15. And I still remember the night that I got arrested and the click of the handcuffs as they tied my hands together by my back. And I remember, you know, even now I'm stuttering when I think of it, but it was a moment that really just woke me up and said, I need to really change where my life is going, because I can't do this to myself, because I think I have more potential than this. And, you know, after that night in that cell where I was alone, where I had time to think about what was happening, I got out and I said, I want to make changes in my life, and I don't ever want to be in a position like this again. And I also know that there's many other youth in our community that are in position that have more potential than this, and I want to be able to give back in some way so that other people don't have to experience that, and they can make better life choices by hearing my story, so that maybe they have a better understanding of some things that they should avoid and the consequences of their actions.
Can you know, and I appreciate your story, and when I heard you speak, Wally, and perform at a conference back in January, you were quite, you know, quite dramatic in telling the story. And I wonder also for listeners, what are those conditions? What was it in your early years before that moment when you were 15 that led to this? Was it, you know, you said you come from a cultural family, there's family situations, there's the physical environment, the social environment. What were some of those causes or triggers that led you down that path before the arrest at 15?
Yeah, definitely. I think two main things that I remember, you know, very, very distinctly are, one, having a conversation with my parents about my careers. And, you know, I'm a very stereotypical South Asian family, I think. And when I was speaking to my parents about potential career paths at, you know, 13, 14 years old, my parents had given me an ultimatum. They just said, you know what, if you're our son, you have to make us proud, and you have three options. You have to be either a lawyer, a doctor, or an engineer. And I wasn't really interested in any of those three, and I still am not interested in any of those three career paths. I think they're great, and I think that my parents had the best in mind for me when they had said that, but it just wasn't my passion. And the other thing that I remember growing up with, alongside the high pressure of having, you know, cultural parents and all that, was, and not just cultural, but I think every parent wants the best for the child, but I think it was just a little bit more constrained in my family in comparison to some of my peers at the time. But the second thing that I think had a really large influence in my life was peer culture. And, you know, when I was growing up, I remember I'm still a fan of hip hop music, but when I was growing up, I didn't really understand what I was listening to, and I remember falling in love with the mainstream hip hop icons like Soulja Boy, you know, who was really big when I was like in 13, you know, grade 8, and I wanted to be more like these icons, and I thought it was a really cool way to live life. And you know, ultimately, we're talking about a lot of superficial things, and I didn't know it at the time, but it had a really large subconscious impact on who I was. And again, that lifestyle that is being perpetuated by these icons isn't the most positive. And I remember being swayed to try to be like that, to make my peer group feel like I belonged and I was cool and I should fit in with them. And for me, I think that was a really big step in trying to find my identity, but also, you know, make some negative choices. Because now I still love hip hop and I still practice it, and I practice poetry as well, which is embedded in hip hop. But you know, I'm able to be positive with it, and I'm able to share positive content through that art form. And now my career is sort of taken off through my poetry as well. So it's interesting how those two things have come back, but in a different way, in a completely different way, years down the road.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I mean, that's so interesting to hear. It was a combination of things. It was your peer pressure. It was your parents' story about what your career should be and the pressure of that, and then the hip hop culture that you've now tried to really turn around and work for you and for the people who are listening to you.
Exactly.
So what was most helpful when people get into these problem situations? And you talked about this when you were arrested and there was a shift in your mindset, and then coming out of it and to become the person who you are today, what would you say, who or what was most helpful and supportive for you to get back on track?
Yeah, you know what the thing is, if you were to look at a kid in that situation, I think one of the biggest things first off the bat that you would notice is that, one, they probably come from a low socioeconomic background, and two, they probably don't have great role models in their lives. So, it could be the absence of a parent. It could...
Oh, Wally, I think we just might have lost you. Wally, are you still there?
They usually align. And you know, if I could say one thing, for anyone you know that's listening right now, is be a mentor. Like, we all have the capacity, the ability to be a mentor, and it's really just doing the small little things, like, you know, saying hello to people, saying hello to kids, saying hey, how you doing, like, what are you up to today, checking in with kids, you know, just sort of building relationships in the community, you know, whether it's the kid that you see playing down, you know, in the street every couple of days, or, you know, one of the schools that you volunteer at, whatever it is. I think building those connections, those relationships, and being a mentor to children or to youth is the biggest way that we can make an impact. And I had a lot of great mentors in high school when I was growing up, and ultimately, if it wasn't for them, I don't think I'd be having this conversation with you right now. And I remember it was just, you know, whenever I wrote a rap or whenever I wrote a poem, I could go into, their offices or their classrooms where they were teaching. It was Miss McIntosh and Miss Riley, I remember specifically. I could go into their office and I could be like, hey guys, I wanted to share my new poem with you. And they would be ecstatic to hear it. And they would even ask me if I had written new material. And that was the difference for me. And I know that that's the difference for so many other kids when they just have someone they can check in with.
Right. That's great. Great advice. Be a mentor and build those relationships. I really appreciate that. My guest this morning is Wally Shaw. He's a spoken word poet and speaker. I'm Mark Franklin here on Career Buzz on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and worldwide at CIUT.FM. So, Wally, how did the speaking the poetry came first, and the writing of poetry, and then the public speaking followed? How did all that start?
Yeah. So you're absolutely right. The poetry and the spoken word definitely did come first, and the speaking came after. The way spoken word started, or the way speaking started?
Well, it sounds like the speaking came next. I mean, you know, listeners are often, or people are often, quite afraid of public speaking. It's one of those fears that people have, you know. So I guess there was an evolution leading up to the speaking, or maybe they came at the same time. Is that how it worked?
No. Well, I mean, I think I found spoken word at a completely different time than I ever considered public speaking. But as it pertains to public speaking, I didn't think that it was something that I wanted to do. I wanted to do more poetry, but I stumbled on it accidentally, almost, in a way. When I was in high school, I was writing my poems, and I was thinking about, you know, I'm going to, you know, university in a year or two, and what's going to happen. And one of the things that I started thinking was, you know, I really want to get active in the community, and I want to share my content with people. What's my market looking like? Where do I share my content? Because this was something that you know, what's it really going to be on mainstream radio? What's it really going to be, you know, on MTV or anything like that? I can put it on YouTube, but where was my market? And one of the things that I remember thinking was, I got to share it at schools. And then I sort of realized, well, schools are always looking for speakers, whether it's like, you know, bullying month or mental illness month. It's always, schools are bringing in speakers all the time. And so I just thought a great way to promote my work would be through speaking. And, you know, coming out of my last year of high school, I started, you know, reaching out to this random schools in the community. They would get back to me. And all of a sudden, I started building up a repertoire for myself. And then I became a partner with the board because I volunteered so many hours. And then I started, you know, asking for compensation for my speaking. And all of a sudden now it's taken me to the point where I've, you know, been able to travel all over the country and do my speaking. So, and it all started from asking, you know, and I think people need to remember that if you don't ask, the answer will always be no. And that's sort of where it started for me. That was the spark.
It's great. So it's quite the part-time job. You know, lots of university students have part-time jobs, and yours is this public speaking gig. But it's great. You've been able to turn what was a sense of giving back into something that actually makes some money for you. You have to live, you have to survive and pay tuition and live. How is the money in public speaking?
Yeah, that's good. Well, it depends. There are people that can make thousands of dollars for one engagement. Presentation. In regards to entry-level speakers such as myself and other people that are just starting off, it usually depends, you know, like you don't really have enough experience to kind of say, I demand this much, this is my rate. So one of the things I'll always say is, you know, what's your budget? What are you working with? What's a fair compensation for someone that's, you know, speaking, who doesn't, I feel like I do a good job. You know, but it still needs a little bit more experience. And so I made a compromise. In the past, I've gotten anywhere between, you know, $400, $500 to maybe $800, $900 for, you know, a day. So it's a pretty good gig. I can't complain. I mean, it's a lot better than doing anything else that I'd ever be doing. So I'm grateful for it.
Right on. That's helpful. I mean, listeners may be interested in that and how much money can you make. And of course, that may be just for one speech, but there's hours and hours and hours that went into preparing for it.
So that's absolutely right, yeah.
So that's great. And so the anti-bullying thing, if we have time, Wally, I want to play that song that you've got, Change the World, because I know you partnered with the Peel School Board. How did you get involved in that anti-bullying campaign?
Yeah, so I had actually brought up that song to them about 2 years ago, and it was, you know, I actually had other plans for this song, but there was a whole bunch of complications, and basically what ended up happening was I wanted someone to record the video for it because I had, I just didn't have the footage that I wanted, and so I brought it up to the board. I said, hey, look, I know you have a media team, and I'd love for you to, you know, see if this could be a potential project. And so when they heard the lyrics to the song, they said, wow, this is something we really like and really resonates with us, and I think our students will love it. So we'd love to, you know, sponsor the cost for the creation of the video. And I was really fortunate enough to have them work with me and collaborate with me. And they paid for the video itself, and then they helped with marketing. And they have the Peel Board has a very, very large audience. They're a school board that reaches out to over 150,000 students. So I had a, you know, I think everything sort of clicked in the right places with that video, and I had a lot of fun making it, and it turned out really well. So I was really happy with it.
Great, it did turn out really well. We're gonna play it in a moment. So, Yeah. So a couple of final questions, Wally. You know, here you are, sort of partway through a career in public speaking and performance art. And you're also a university student. So what are your career plans? What do you envision for yourself over the coming years?
Yeah, well, you know, it's it definitely isn't easy to make a career out of public speaking. It's something that is difficult. You know, you have to get your bookings to a high enough frequency that you're doing it full time. But with that being said, it's not impossible, and I would ideally, I think, like to pursue public speaking and poetry workshopping as a career. But in the event that maybe that doesn't work out, or maybe I feel like I have a change of heart, I would still like to work with people. So as I mentioned before, I always felt like I'm a social person. And, you know, I've had a lot of great mentors in my life that are doing a lot of work with youth, too, that have inspired me. And I think one of the things, or two of the things, rather, that I feel like I do great at is either teaching and working with students in a school or doing social work. And right now, I feel like personally I'm leaning more towards social work and getting my master's in social work, because I'll be able to reach out to kids that need it most, that have, you know, the mental illness, or they are at risk, or they are dealing with, you know, troubles and issues similar to some of the things that I've gone through. So I know that maybe God's got a plan for me in terms of that career. So that's sort of where I'm leaning towards and what I'm thinking.
Great. Thanks for sharing that. Finally, Wally, after the changes in your life and the some of the twists and turns that have occurred to you, and I know it's early years in early career time for you, but for listeners who might want to gain something from your experience, what can you share? One thing maybe that you can share about making good choices and good decisions in your life, in your education, in your career, that you've personally learned from your own experience?
Yeah, definitely. I think the biggest thing I've learned is to be resilient, you know, and to push through and never give up on anything that you want to do. There was moments where I didn't ever think. I mean, I never thought, someone asked me 6 years ago when I was in that cell that I'd be doing an interview with you, Mark. I'd probably laugh and say, no way. But, you know, the resilience, I think, is the key factor, because when you say, you know, I'm going to try and I'm going to work hard, then that's the first step to greatness.
Great. And, right on.
And
If listeners want to find out more about you, how do they do that?
They can find me on my website, which is www.wally, my first name, WALIFLO, and my last name, Shah, SHAH.com.
Right on. And why don't you set this up for us, Wally? I want to play Change the World. We'll hit play in a moment. How do you want to intro it?
This is Change the World. I wrote the song that's got my heart and soul in it, and I want to inspire kids with my music. So take a listen.
Thanks so much, Wally Shah.
Thank you.
Every boy and every girl, don't let the world change your smile. Let your smile change the world.
I think that we could change the world. I think that we could change the world. Yeah. I think that we could be the reason that we believe in the children dreaming. I think that we could change the world. I think that we could change the world.
Show you the world reality as it is. Where the children always suffer, yet the future's in our kids. Where innocent people die for things that they never did. It's a lie, just a fib, that's a lie, this is it. Putting love in all I do's the only occupation I'll take up. See beauty inside of yourself instead of your makeup. This song's for the girl crying in the bathroom stall, and for the kid who dreams of playing pro basketball. I wanna use music to give back to the world, cause behind every smile's a self-conscious girl who hates her braces or straightens her curls just because she wants to fit in with the popular girls. While we're trying to look cool, influenced to skip school, parents saying this ain't you, the world's against you. But please stay hopeful, cause you are not alone, and you don't have to fight this battle on your own.
I think that we could change the world. I think that we could change the world. I think that we could be the reason that we believe in the children dreaming.
Come on.
I think that we could change the world. I think that we could change the world.
World.
I think that we could be the reason that we believe in the children dreaming.
Just because you got eyes doesn't mean that you can see, though. People ignore the truth for fallacies like placebo. The ones calling the shot think the ones shooting the free throws. People quick to judge each other because of these clothes. I rap for youth with anxiety and depression, with no support from their peers, and they're supposed to make an impression while they constantly judge because of where they dress. And though he's barely in class, life's taught him some lessons, cause he's that kid without the right mentorship. Rap became his father cause he thought that he could vent to it, but the artists don't care so long as they make some sense to it. He's repeating lyrics not knowing there isn't sense to it. Pops left, mom works two jobs, so he's neglected. Now he's desperately finding new ways to be accepted, and hip-hop paints the wrong image of being respected. I've seen good kids turn reckless, but check this.
I think that we could change the world. I think that we could change the world. I think that we could be the reason. children dreaming. I think that we could change the world. I think that we could change the world. I think that we could be the reason that we believe in the children dreaming.
You gotta walk in someone's shoes before trash talking and guessing. We always look for more instead of counting our blessings. There's other people mourning and day to day they be stressing. We always staying silent, won't somebody raise the question? Things are lopsided, divided, it's all pretentious. I wanna change the world, I don't care about being mentioned. The kids with big dreams do nothing but pursue it. And don't ever let someone tell you that you can't do it.
I think that we could change the world. That we could change the world. I think that we could be the reason that we believe in the children dreaming. I think that we could change the world. I think that we could change the world. I think that we could be the reason that we believe in the children dreaming.
You never know what people go through, so let's do our part for our community. Change the world. Change starts with you.
Please join us for a special CIUT fundraising event featuring guest speaker David Barsamian, founder, director of Alternative Radio. David will speak to the topic of ecocide, war on the planet. A Q&A session with the audience will follow. This CIUT fundraising event will be held on Monday, March 21st, beginning at 12 noon. It'll be held in the Debates Room, Hart House, U of T. Tickets are only $30, and you may purchase them in advance online at CIUT.fm. Tax receipts will be provided. An afternoon with David Barsamian, Monday, March 21st, beginning at 12 noon. Get your ticket at CIUT.fm today.
Right here, right now, every day. CIUT 89.5, Toronto. Sound of your city.
And we're back at Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. Before moving on to today's second and third interviews, I want to let listeners know there's an inspiring group of podcasts on the Career Buzz episodes. If you click the Career Buzz button on the right side of careercycles.com, check out the February 24th show. I interviewed Luke Anderson from Stopgap Foundation, truly an inspiring story of career change and resilience, like Wally Shaw was talking about. Also, I had on that show Jillian Barth. She's president and CEO of Care Canada. So that's the Career Buzz button at careercycles.com, or just go straight to careercycles.com/radio. Career Cycles is also leading a fun and free career clarification event, Gain Confidence and Clarity. It's called Who You Are Matters. It's fun. It's effective. You leave with a substantive takeaway career statement. It's Wednesday, March 23rd. Wednesday, March 23rd. Register at careercycles.com and click the Who You Are Matters event. Engineers Without Borders invests in people and ideas to end global poverty. Its mission is to create change by supporting social innovations in Canada and Africa. In January, Engineers Without Borders held its annual conference in Hamilton, Ontario, and I was pleased to be your Career Buzz correspondent. Fred Kuatoko is a member of the Dream Team. It's a diverse consumer and survivor group whose mission is that everyone with a mental health issue has access to safe, secure, and affordable supportive housing. Fred Kuatoko was the keynote speaker at the EWB conference. Here's my interview with Fred.
Today is Fred Kuatoko. He's a motivational speaker and advocate for the Dream Team. Fred, welcome to the interview.
Thank you.
So you're a motivational speaker, you're an advocate. What do you like about your career?
What I like about it is because it's, first of all, it gives me the confidence to deal with the everyday, to help, first of all, to help people that are dealing with the problem of mental health, because I'm a mental health survivor. And coming to Canada, actually, where I have been diagnosed with depression, PTSD, and schizophrenia, and I found resources available which helped me and to be what I am, I've become today, one of which is joining this group called the Dream Team. Through the Dream Team, there I had a sense of belonging again, because I faced stigma all my life and discrimination. And now, through this group, I met wonderful peers, wonderful people. They have equipped me with the knowledge. They prepared me to know how to face this dilemma of stigma. Being there, I have learned to be responsible again. As a result of that, you can see today, I am representing the Dream Team here in Hamilton through this great national conference organized by the EWB, which is the Engineers Without Borders.
So now the Dream Team,
yes,
that you're a part of representing here at the EWB conference, where you did a keynote speech,
yes,
yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So what does the Dream Team do? What is its purpose?
Over there, we advocate for certain rights, the rights which are really the human right, basic human rights of those individuals that are facing problems such as mine, I would say mental health and the homelessness. So when I came, I embraced this group I was referred to, they received me with all the malaise, all the problems, the fears that I had when I joined this group. I became actually an advocate because I saw they were representing me. They gave me a voice. Through the Dream Team, my voice is being heard, that a person without housing or a person with mental health who's trying to recover without housing, it is practically impossible because you have no place to go to and lay your head. You know, and so there I am learning how to advocate for the right, the human right to have affordable housing.
So you're doing these interesting advocacy, important work.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a long and winding road that brought you here.
Yes.
Where do we start? What can we say about the story and maybe a couple of the important twists and turns,
yes,
that you can share with listeners about your journey?
First of all, I am originally from the country called the Democratic Republic of Congo. It used to be called Zaire.
Yes.
And from there, I have experienced, I've had some problems with depression. But I didn't quite understand what it was because we did not really have resources back home. And also, though I began back home during my teen years to understand that there was something having to do with mental health, my head, because I was not really feeling like the way I used to feel at times.
Yes.
I will withdraw from the rest of my friends. At any rate, I turned 20 back in 1985. 86, I traveled to the U.S. But due to complications in healthcare in the U.S. and the limitations in policies there, I was not diagnosed. I didn't have access to healthcare there. So after several years in the U.S., I've struggled with that. I attended university, but it took me several years because I was dealing with this mental health, but I did not know. It was never diagnosed. Finally graduated, went to grad school. Also, and then I
and
went...
And what did you study, Fred?
First of all, I had a business management degree from Georgia State University with a minor in mathematics. Then I attended a theological seminary. I had interest in Christian ministry.
Yes.
Because I wanted to understand certain aspects of life. Why I was the way I was. The way I was feeling, I didn't quite understand. So I attended the seminary to understand, who is that creator that I hear about? Where are you? Because here I am being menaced with this problem I'm facing. From there, I did my program. I went back home. I got in trouble because I've expressed being exposed to the freedom in the West. I went there and I expressed the same type of voice. I got in trouble, tortured, received different treatment and the shots in the head. I've lost my mind again. It made my condition really worse. I've managed, with the help of others, to leave the country. This time I came to Canada. I was accepted.
When did you arrive in Canada?
2008.
Yes.
And my condition actually worsened, and I received treatment. I was first diagnosed with PTSD and excessive or advanced depression and schizophrenia, and some heavy medications. Of course, I still take medications now. And I have some therapists and psychiatrists that I see. Dr. Claire Payne at Mount Sinai Hospital, who's been really great help in my life. But it was not enough, you see, with medications. I wanted a sense of to feel respected, a sense of belonging somewhere, because I was facing stigma on a daily basis. Then I joined, I discovered this place called the Dream Team. And, of course, there were other organizations I've joined as well. But something unique about the Dream Team, because they advocate for what I have been longing. I wanted my voice to be heard. I needed a place, a permanent place to be, a permanent place to put my family. And through the Dream Team, I've learned to understand the importance of advocating for those in need of supportive housing, you know, and it gave me a sense of responsibility, a sense of belonging being there. They have equipped me with the knowledge, and that knowledge to know how to face that stigma that is around every day, you know. And
how did you, now you're doing this good work with the Dream Team,
yes,
through the years after your studies,
yes,
how did the world of work deal with you? Were you able to work with an undiagnosed mental health issue? What was your interaction with the world of work over those years?
That's an excellent question. It's very discouraging to even talk about it because, of course, I've been laid off a few times, and I knew because of mental health, starting with even school. When I came, actually, I also attended the McMaster University. I went to the theological school to specialize in other areas of ministry, such as the language Hebrew and Greek. But I also faced discrimination there when I disclosed that I was suffering from mental health. As a result, I had to leave the program, you see. On a daily basis, at work, it was tough because sometimes I didn't have the courage to go to work, you see. But it was never understood. I didn't have the courage to even express that I was facing this problem because of stigma. It was the fear that I had. I've lost jobs after jobs, you see, and that's what I can tell you.
And what is the message now as you advocate for people with mental health,
yes,
challenges, and then there's the workplace to accommodate people with mental health problems? What is the message of advocacy to the workplace in Canada?
Well, when you say that it's a workplace to accommodate people whilst facing this dilemma of mental health, It's something that is in the process, you know, and not so many companies have opened up to that.
Yes.
And one more thing, the Dream Team is working on something called the inclusive employment. Basically, we have actually finished, we worked on this forum called Workability, whereby we had to interact with the private sector.
Yes.
And we had to basically inform and persuade and educate as to the importance of putting back people with person with lived experience, or those who have suffered from these conditions, by providing some means to accommodate them, because we are capable, we can also do the job. You know, there are those who need accommodations, and if it's provided, we can do just as much as the other person who hasn't experienced mental health.
My guest today is Fred Kuatoko. He's a motivational speaker and advocate with the Dream Team. Fred, last question. You've shared much of your story, and there's been many chapters to your story, some very difficult.
Yes.
What can you share with listeners about what you've learned about making choices, making good choices in your life and your career? What can you share with listeners that you've learned from your own life?
You know, I've come a long way. I have faced a lot of barriers in my life from the, let's say, the global perspective, and from Africa, from the U.S., now here. But especially for those that are facing this problem, mental health, or those that are recovering, it is best to connect, to find a place whereby you can share with others, share ideas, or hear from those that are coping successfully, progressively, so that you can gain some insights as to how to cope with your problem.
Yes. Finally, Fred, if people want to find out more about the Dream Team or get you to speak at their event, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, they can reach the Dream Team by the website. The Dream Team is www.thedreamteam.ca. You know, yeah. And if I should be, or someone is interested in reaching me directly, I have also a number, for example, I wouldn't mind being called at 416-830-6422. Once again, 416-830-6422.
Fred Kuatoko, thank you so much for joining us here on the interview.
Thank you. It was a pleasure, sir.
That was my interview with Fred Kuatoko. He was the keynote speaker at the Engineers Without Borders conference in Hamilton, Ontario in January of this year. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz on CIUT 89.5 FM and worldwide at CIUT.fm. I also spoke to Delise Sylvester at the EWB conference. She's a social innovation expert. With Ashoka's Changemakers, she led over 60 global campaigns with partners such as National Geographic, Nike, eBay, and Google. With CUSO, she focused on Aboriginal cultural rights in Canada and the South Pacific, and she was also executive director of Selkirk College Foundation. Currently, Delise Sylvester is a member of BC Partners for Social Impact and executive in residence at Simon Fraser University. Delise is also director of communications with the Natural Step Canada. I met her at the EWB conference, where she facilitated and led an insightful session on narratives and story. Here is my interview with Delise Sylvester.
My guest today is Delise Sylvester. She's principal social currents. My name is Mark Franklin, host of Career Buzz and Career Cycles. Delise, welcome to the interview.
Thanks. Great to meet you and also be part of the interview.
What do you like about your career these days?
Oh, I love my career. It's one of those opportunities where I'm not inside an office, and although I work with a fantastic team, I get to work with a number of teams. Like, literally, I'm asked to join a number of processes, and I get to meet a whole group of people that are looking at an issue completely distinct and from different sectoral positions, etc. So a lot of the work that I'm doing right now is working with, call them social labs, where it's a particular wicked problem, a system that's stuck, and that requires a host of diverse stakeholders to come together that often don't agree with each other. Often haven't worked together, and maybe even have avoided each other for the last decade or so. So they make a commitment into the room because they're affected by the problem and they can't do it alone. So they recognize if they could do it alone, they would have done it alone on their own, because nobody wants to collaborate unless they have to. They step into this process and they start building trust and learning from each other and respecting each other's positions, starting to recognize that the other person or the several other people around the room were the missing puzzle pieces for them.
Mm.
And then they start working on this collaboration together, and they work on policy, and they work on breakthrough outcomes and the new business practices, and I get to be in the middle of that.
So it sounds like facilitation, like you, Social Currents. Is this a company that does facilitation? What are some of the things that you get up to in Social Currents?
Social Currents, if I use it in the lab context, I mean, Social Currents can apply to a number of contexts, but the lab one is just something that's interesting to me right now. I do a value add, which is to look at communications. So I'm somebody who's very, very interested in democracy and the ability for citizens to engage, give their advocacy, their time, their financial support to initiatives that really matter to them. And I feel like over the last 30 years, 40 years, our decision-making process has been eroding in terms of citizen engagement. You know, most of the infrastructure in Canada was built by volunteer groups that were closest to the problem: hospitals, education systems, recycling programs. And as they were professionalized and government applied money to scale, there was less and less involvement or entry points for citizens to be engaged. And I think that's really affecting our democracy, the low voting rate, et cetera. People need to be reconnected to what matters to them. And so what Social Currents does is make that connection back.
Wow, that sounds like a grand purpose. So what kind of skills do you need to be successful, to pull off the kinds of things like the workshop you did here at the Engineers Without Borders conference? What sort of skills do you use regularly to be successful?
That's a really good question. Curiosity, respect, recognizing when I'm reacting to somebody's opinion and I'm closing off and not listening to them, recognizing that and then starting to work to an understanding that that person's opinion matters. Essentially recognizing that any exciting conversation that's full of tension and full of opportunity is a conversation that others want to be a part of.
Mm.
And so just keeping it in four walls amongst the selected few, that's not good enough. How do you take that conversation and start breaking down those walls so others can engage it, knowing full well that their opinion is going to make it far more richer?
My guest today is Delise Sylvester. She's Principal Social Currents. I'm your host, Mark Franklin of Career Cycles. So, Delise, let's step back. Like, you're doing some very interesting work and interested in some big things. How did this all start? If we try and map your trajectory, what were a couple of turning points that really were important to bring you to where you are today?
Well, I think it's a background in my family that we're very socially conscious minded, but we're also entrepreneurs. So at a very young age, I didn't have these kind of separate pillars of business over here and social ends over here. I had a marriage of it. So my father was very, very active in ensuring that voices that were not at the table got to the table. And his big passion was education and First Nation, Métis, and Inuit. He really wanted to see their voices in building curriculum, etc. So I've got a sense of it's a far better product and a far better process with diverse voices. Mm. And you're going to find the best voices are the ones that have been deselected out of the system because they have the opportunity to disrupt it. And
wow.
So he said, always look for the disruptive voices. They're the ones that you're going to find the best leadership. And my mother had her own area, which was around sexual health for women at a time when that wasn't even a word that, you know, a phrase that you could even say in company. And she made a real passion and commitment to ensuring that women's sexual health was primary. And she was a nurse. And then she went on to really looking at the disenfranchised through aging process and became a real advocate for, the elders. And that coupled with a ridiculously entrepreneurial edge that my parents had. We grew up, all of us kids, grandchildren. My grandparents had a tent and trailer park.
Wow.
And that was the time when the generation where you had to have multiple sources of income to actually, you know, make sure that your kids were fed. My grandparents had 12 children.
Wow.
And so my grandfather was a railroad engineer, but he also bought this, you know, 10 trailer parks for when he was retired.
Where continue. Were these?
In Penticton,
yes.
In the Okanagan. And I started working at that trailer park at a very young age. In fact, there's a joke that my brother said. He said, free the children. Where was free the children when we were growing up?
You were working.
We were
and
child
laboring.
Labor. But we learned so many skills. I remember one time my brother and I were, I was 10 years old and he was 14, and my grandfather had asked us to lay down the electrical track for a whole new section for full hookups. And my brother, when he was putting two wires together, told me to get out of the hole because it was all underground so I wouldn't be electrocuted. And he said, either today we're going to be the youngest kids that, you know, hooked up a full hookup on the side, or we're the youngest dead kids.
Yeah. Well, you're here to tell the tale, so we know what happened.
We're here to tell the tale. So that entrepreneurial edge was really important to me, and I went on to do a series of businesses that had a social focus from that point forward. And Social Currents is just another iteration of that.
So there was a big step in there. There's probably many steps.
Yeah.
One of which I've heard you talk about was a stint with Ashoka.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
was one of those amazing opportunities. I was working as executive director of a foundation of a college, and I started to really recognize that although this college was brilliant, the bureaucratic nature of the college was really not the kind of space that I was really flourishing in. So although I really loved the job, I knew I needed to step out of it. So I remember talking to a guy named Robert Gass, because at the time we had young children, and my husband was creating a hospice for, volunteering, creating a hospice in our community. So I was the only breadwinner. And I met with a guy named Robert Gass, and I said to him, he's a leadership trainer, and I said, should I step away from this amazing job in this tiny little community and, literally go into the unknown and not sure if I could feed my family? And he said, every job has an arc. It's like swinging on a vine. And you know when you're getting to the peak of the vine and it's going to start swinging back. Mm. And if you hold on too long, you're going to hit a tree. He said, what you need to know is as you're swinging up to that peak, that there is another vine coming towards you. It's coming. You got to let go.
That's a beautiful metaphor.
And he said, in order to grab the vine. And he said, but the best part is you get to fly in between.
Yeah.
So he said, never, ever look for another job while you're in one. Let go of that job. Fly and know when the next one's coming to come.
Wow.
And Ashoka was coming towards me. So literally after 2 months I left the job, I got a call out of nowhere from a guy named Charlie Brown, who's a brilliant guy. He's now running an organization called Context Partners. And he said, my dad told me that if I heard somebody's name 4 times in 1 week, I should call them. And he said, I just heard your name for the 4th time. I don't know who you are, but I've got this initiative happening with Ashoka. Do you want to join me and build this together? And so essentially what it was Ashoka was being really challenged.
Do you want to tell listeners, just if they're not sure what Ashoka is, what do they do?
Yeah, I always just assume everybody knows what Ashoka, because they've made such a huge impact on the globe. But Social Currents is the granddaddy of the social entrepreneurship movement. Bill Drayton basically felt that the two pillars, business and civil society, were growing too distinct from each other, and he wanted to marry the two. So he really felt that the market was a force for good if it was managed properly. And so he wanted to bring the business acumen together with the social intent, and together they would work really well. And he had a premise, which was for every problem, there were a group of social entrepreneurs closest to the problem that were working on the solution. And so you had to find them. And you had to find them and go through a rigorous process to really see if their innovation was scalable, because that's what he was very really focused on. That particular that problem in that particular community that had that kind of acumen, if it was given the time, it was given the resources, financial, media, etc., could it be an innovation that could scale around the world? And then communities that were struggling with the same problem, who may not necessarily have the solution, could accelerate change much more quickly by being able to grab something and go. So Ashoka was really going around the world to find the most nascent, scalable social solutions. And they were faced with a challenge. After 30 years, they were finding that they weren't finding the most nascent problems. They weren't finding them as quickly as they could. And so they wanted to use the power of the internet to really be able to open source solutions. So that's what Charlie and I did, was to come up with a mechanism to do that, to really create a pull culture for innovations to come onto our platform. And what we discussed and decided on was to create the first online collaborative competition. So essentially, by the time I left, we had done 60 global collaborative competitions that were from every issue, ending human slavery. G20 brought us on board to find the most interesting new financial inclusion models to transition people from microcredit to small and medium-sized businesses, addressing intimate partner violence, issues around privacy, which Google actually funded us to do.
Wow.
Yeah. So what it was also to do was, we learned through the process, was it was transforming the foundation, how money was being distributed. Because if you look at, if anyone out there has applied for a, put a proposal into a foundation. It's like going into a black box. You put all of this acumen and intel into a proposal, and the only one or two people see it. So with this online platform, it was we were able to reveal all the proposals.
Well, it's like
so
crowdsourcing. It sounds like totally one of the earliest crowdsourcing
really was.
For social purpose organizations or initiatives. Yeah. Great. Wow. So, you know, that's so interesting that you were, what was your role there with Ashoka for those years?
So I was the director of community, essentially, and designing the competition and then sourcing the innovations. And by the time I left, there was probably a team of about 60 people in five different languages all around the world sourcing these innovations. I think when we left, there was probably about 60,000 innovations we had sourced in 127 countries and 60 different issues.
And if Ashoka was one vine that you were swinging across, then what happened when you let go of that one and picked up the next one?
Well, there's a kind of a timeline to it. I started to recognize that I was in a pattern that I would leave an organization every 7 to 8 years. And it was hard to leave Ashoka, but 8 years had come up, and I kind of trusted that this process was working, that I'd step out, wait for something else to come towards me, and I got into a whole new area that I never would have discovered if I stayed in the same organization. So I did that, and I decided to create this organization called Social Currents, which was about bringing these conversations into a larger pool. So it's, you know, a lot of our social issues get smaller and smaller audiences because a lot of the people who are developing the content are creating these kind of niche approaches that have smaller and smaller audiences for them. And I thought, this is such good, important information. How do we more popularize it so more people could experience it? So I came up with a few ideas, actually, the precursor to Social Currents while I was at Ashoka. I went to the New Yorker, the New York Times, and I went to the Christian Science Monitor. And at this time, I was really acutely aware of how media, the whole media system, was eroding in terms of, you know, lost business model for media, their inability to create their own content. And so the Otto Scharmer approach is, you really don't understand the system until it's broken, and you really don't know what the opportunities to disrupt is until the system is broken. Well, I saw this media system breaking, and then I saw some opportunities. So one of the things I started to notice...
That was my interview with Delise Sylvester. She was a speaker and facilitator at the Engineers Without Borders Conference in Hamilton, Ontario in January, and I was your Career Buzz correspondent there. You have been listening to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. You can find out more about me at careercycles.com, and if you have comments on today's show, please email me. It's Mark with a K at careercycles.com. Thanks to my guests today, Fred Kuatoko, Delise Sylvester, and Wally Shaw. Technical production today was by Fiona Gann, Mike Tadros, and Fraser Allen. An MP3 of today's show is available from Career Buzz, the Career Buzz button at careercycles.com, including the full interview with Delise Sylvester. Catch Career Buzz every Wednesday, 11 a.m. here on CIUT. That's it for today's version of Career Buzz. I'm Mark Franklin. Thank you for listening to Career Buzz. ¿Qué voy a hacer? Je ne sais plus. ¿Qué voy a hacer?